Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. We begin on the first page with Showing Up, YWCA Stepping Stones Make Sure Survivors' Families Don't Feel Alone. This is by Olivia Jacobs. While April can represent many things, YWCA Stepping Stones of McLean County is focused on bringing awareness to sexual assault. The local Sexual Assault Resource Center, which launched in 2002 and is the only such organization in McLean County, has hosted events throughout the month for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, including the Teal Chair Project, Clothesline Project, Support Tables, panel discussions, and a self-defense class. Though the organization works year-round to bring awareness to issues relating to sexual assault, its two biggest events will be held next week, including the Final Steps Awareness Walk and a documentary screening of Our Side by Xingling Zeng, followed by a panel. The walk will take place from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, April 27th, at Miller Park in Bloomington, and the documentary will be shown at 7 p.m. April 29th at the Normal Theater. Nastasha Powers, Coordinator of Advocacy and Education for YWCA Stepping Stones, said this will mark the second year of the Final Steps Walk. "The way I envisioned it, it was to be able to bring the community together, like we see the teal chairs here in the community. And that's exciting. But to have the people actually come out and raise awareness, that was big for me," she said. "There's not any winners in the walk, like the community. When we come together, that's when we win." Powers said the goal of the walk is to show survivors they are not alone, and there's an entire community to support them. In addition to the walk itself, the event will include a table to teach children about the history of the YWCA, along with a clothesline project display and a table for survivors to make shirts for next year's clothesline project. The clothesline project, displaying t-shirts decorated by survivors or a loved one to represent the impact of the violence they experienced, has been on display this month during First Friday in downtown Bloomington and last week at Heartland Community College. For the Teal Chair Project, the YWCA partners with more than 100 local businesses to place chairs representing the impact of sexual assault on survivors, their families, and the community, and drawing attention to the fact that assaults occur in McLean County. The chairs are painted teal to represent the symbol of sexual violence prevention, which is a teal ribbon. The chairs also display Stepping Stones 24/7 hotline number, a QR code to Stepping Stones resources, and a sign affixed by a teal ribbon and reading "Step Up and Believe Victims." The teal chairs can be found at partnering businesses every Friday in April. A list is at ywcammclean.org, S-A-A-M. Powers said it's important for survivors to know people believe them, support them, and want to help them all year long, not just during Sexual Assault Awareness Month. "It's as simple as wearing teal. It's as simple as posting something on social media to say, 'Hey, I acknowledge that this is Sexual Assault Awareness Month,'" Powers said. "It's as simple as showing up to an event and just, you know, being there. Whether you're showing up in person or you're showing up virtually, to help to raise awareness, that is the biggest thing." She continued, "What you don't realize is that when you share a post on social media, it's a possibility that you may come into contact with a survivor that we haven't been in contact with. So you've shared that resource with them, and you've directed them to a space that is able to provide them with the help and assistance and support at no additional charge. And so I think that is just as supportive, just to show up and be there." Powers said a panelist for the Our Side documentary screening on April 29th. Powers will be a panelist for the Our Side screening. The documentary, partially filmed in Bloomington Normal, explores the post-traumatic growth and healing of survivors. Powers will join the filmmakers, local survivors, and other advocates and experts in the discussion. Seats will be available on a first-come, first-served basis. I love being on the panel, she said. You already know so much, but being on a panel with other people, you take away more that you can use to implement it in the work that you do. And so I think that's a big piece of it, too. In addition to hosting events for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, YWCA Stepping Stones of McLean County is undergoing an expansion of its physical site at 1201 North Hershey Road in Bloomington. Stepping Stones director Jen Galladay said the organization is in the first stage, which involves demolition, so it's too early to have a full timeline for construction. Work began April 15th as crews started ripping out ceiling tiles and floors. The expansion will include a reception area just for Stepping Stones clients, along with private restrooms, an inclusive hotline center, a confidential waiting room, and double the counseling space. I would call it a Stepping Stones suite, essentially, Galladay said. The soundproofing is going to be the top of the line because, you know, we have sound machines to block the sound from going out into the hallway, but it doesn't stop the sound that's coming in. So all that will be eliminated, which will be fantastic. That's the goal, is to make it a better space for our clients, so I can't wait. The YWCA reported last spring it had received 287 crisis intervention calls in 2022 and served 296 recurring clients. In total that year, Stepping Stones provided 3,194 hours of counseling and advocacy services. At the March McLean County Board meeting, the YWCA said it served more than 100 children who experienced sexual violence in 2023, and as of mid-March, the center had a waiting list of 65 individuals seeking counseling. April is an important month for YWCA Stepping Stones because it gives us an opportunity to share resources with the community, said YWCA CEO Liz German. Despite a lot of research, people are still sometimes surprised to hear all of the services we offer, like serving survivors' loved ones, as well as those that have experienced stalking. All of our services are free. We want to eliminate any barriers to survivors. We know our community is stronger when survivors and their loved ones have the support and resources through Stepping Stones. The expansion will enable Stepping Stones to increase its services by 35% to 40%, the YWCA said. Further updates about the expansion will be provided at the YWCA's annual Circle Luncheon on May 16th. Galladay said the biggest way people can make a difference for Stepping Stones is to volunteer, as organization leaders are always looking for help to staff the 24-hour hotline and hospital call-outs. The YWCA also holds volunteer trainings, with one coming up next month and another in August. Even in the midst of us raising awareness, we have to advocate, so we do prevention. But we have to do intervention too, Powers said. And so I think that Sexual Assault Awareness Month is a way for us to, number one, have that dedicated time to just push to get that awareness out. But it's a reminder that we're not doing the job alone, or it's not just our voice. It's the work of the community and society to raise awareness with the hopes that we will reduce and hold people that harm accountable. In other local news, we have Bloomington Normal to celebrate Arbor Day with planting and tree tours by Matus Janik. Bloomington Normal is celebrating Arbor Day and is being recognized by Tree City USA this weekend. Normal Park Maintenance Supervisor Tyler Bain will talk with fifth grade students from Sugar Creek Elementary School at 9:30 a.m. Friday about the importance of trees and how the town takes care of trees in the community. Students will then have the chance to help plant white oak trees, which are Illinois' state tree. Bloomington's Beautification Committee has selected Corpus Christi Catholic School as the recipient of this year's annual Arbor Day tree with a planting at 10:30 a.m. Friday. This is Bloomington's 38th year and Normal's 25th year being recognized as a Tree City USA. Arbor Day tree talks will also be held from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday across various locations with experts available to provide more detailed information of trees at each location. Tree talks will take place at 9:30 a.m., 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. at each of the following locations: Underwood Park, 200 Jersey Avenue in Normal; Miller Park, 1020 South Morris Avenue in Bloomington; Fell Arboretum at 700 West College Avenue, Normal; and Heartland Community College at 1500 Robb Road in Normal. Westminster Village in Bloomington will also host tours of its fountain garden at 9:40 a.m. and 11 a.m. and its foundation garden at 1 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. For information and details on what kinds of trees will be featured, you can visit events.illinoisstate.edu/event/arbor-day-tree-talk/. Next, Brendan Dennison writes, Paper Quilt Project Rolls Out at West Bloomington Revitalization Project. The West Bloomington Revitalization Project is inviting people to patch their art together into a community quilt made of paper through next month. The WBRP, located at 724 West Washington Street, kicked off its paper quilt project Sunday afternoon with about a dozen entries already submitted. The final project is expected to grow to 64 square feet and be shown on site in an unveiling from 4 to 7 p.m. May 30th for National Creativity Day. Sarah Hurley, director of the project's Art and Beautification Program, said the quilt is a way to engage in creative placemaking. That's defined by the National Endowment for the Arts as integrating arts, culture, and design activities into actions that strengthen communities. Per the WBRP website, the Art and Beautification Program's mission is, quote, to provide tasteful, aesthetically pleasing, and artistic beautification projects that honor our historical and cultural roots, build on the pride and strengths of our neighborhoods, and engage residents, close quote. Hurley said the Community Quilt Project is completely connected to her role at WBRP. She also said paper quilting activities are being supported by a grant from the McLean County Arts Center. The quilt project is providing three inspirational prompts for participants: roots, pride, and vision. Firstly, artists are asked to look towards their roots like a cherished family tradition. Secondly, they're asking to describe a moment they felt pride in their community or consider how they can add to the strength and vibrancy of West Bloomington. Thirdly, they're asked to share a hope or aspiration for future residents or visualize how they can make West Bloomington more equitable and inclusive. A group of five children, aged 6 to 10, were the first youngsters to impart their creative spirits Sunday for the paper quilt. Their illustrations included self-portraits, flowers, and a bright green drill seen in the WBRP's tool library. At least two couples came in that day to start their quilt pieces. Two. One pair was Trinity Poindexter, 19, of Bloomington, and Macaulay Woodfork, 22, of Normal. Poindexter said the project is a way to get people to be creative and be part of something. After painting a solitary koi fish, Poindexter noted that koi fish have random color patterns on their scales, and showing a koi fish by itself represents balance and colorfulness. Poindexter said the project was fun, peaceful, and welcoming. Woodfork said he drew inspiration from his family traditions. His submission depicted an ornamented Christmas tree. He also said he'd like to see more events like the Community Paper Quilt Project. It breaks routine, he said. The WBRP is open 11:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturdays. Residents are welcome to drop in during open hours to make a submission on site or at home. Supplies like paint and markers will be provided. After the unveiling, the quilt will be on display in the WBRP Memorial Garden, weather permitting, throughout the summer. In state news, we have cities would feel brunt of ending tax. Pritzker plan would sunset 1% grocery tax. This is by Jana Wiersema with the News Gazette. Governor J.B. Pritzker's proposal to eliminate the state's grocery tax would likely result in only a very modest savings to individual households and cause a consequential loss of revenue for local governments, according to a report released by the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. The report, written by University of Illinois Associate Economics Professor Elizabeth Powers, analyzes the potential impacts of eliminating the state's 1% grocery tax on most food items eaten at home, proceeds of which are distributed entirely to municipalities. Pritzker's fiscal 2025 budget proposal includes permanently eliminating the tax effective July 1st. Doing so would mean the loss of roughly $325 million for municipal governments statewide, according to estimates from the Illinois Municipal League. Grocery taxes are a controversial way to raise revenue, Powers acknowledged, because low-income households spend much higher share of their income on food than better-off households. The concern is that the grocery tax may be regressive, so that low-income households end up paying more than their fair share of taxes. A tax on food eaten in the home should cause people to consume a greater quantity, could cause people to consume a greater quantity of less nutritious food outside of the home, she added. It's one more regressive tax we just don't need, the governor said in his budget address. If it reduces inflation for families from 4% to 3%, even if it only puts a few $100 back in families' pockets, it's the right thing to do. In her analysis, Powers noted that a family would have to spend at least $30,000 on groceries in a year to save a few $100 on taxes. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported in 2022 that households' average annual spending on at-home food items ranged from about $3,600 to $8,500. Federal data also showed that families with less money coming in spend a greater proportion of it on groceries, with low-income families using 22% of their income for these purchases, compared to 4% for families on the high end. That would suggest that the grocery tax is regressive, Powers wrote. However, low-income families are able to use the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program to help with food costs. The benefit program reduces the burden of the grocery tax on those in the lowest income category, but its impact is still greater for those in the middle and lower middle section of the spectrum than those at the high end. As for the argument that eliminating a grocery tax would encourage healthier eating, she cited a USDA study that found that such measures do not appear to affect how often SNAP recipients eat at home. In discussing the impact to local government, Powers noted that Pritzker and the General Assembly previously agreed to suspend the grocery tax for fiscal 2023, but reimburse local governments for their losses. Pritzker is not proposing to compensate municipalities for the loss this time. Additionally, Powers noted that SNAP benefits were still enhanced due to the pandemic during the previous suspension, so it's likely that the revenue losses would be higher now than that the COVID-19 provisions now that the COVID-19 provisions have expired. Pritzker has said that municipalities could impose their own grocery tax if they wish, though Powers noted that such a decision might be difficult to explain to taxpayers. Here are a couple of brief items. Downs to shut off water downtown. Boil order to follow. The village of Downs will be shutting off the water in the downtown area starting at 8 a.m. Tuesday today to move a hydrant. The work is expected to take most of the day, according to a news release. When the water is turned back on, the following areas will be under a boil order until further notice. Seminary Street from Washington Street to Franklin Street. Water Street from Washington Street to Franklin Street. Washington Street from Price Street to Lincoln Avenue. And Main Street from Price Street to Lincoln Avenue. For further updates, residents should visit the village's website at villageofdowns.org. And we have the Heartland Community College Student Government Association has named its new student officers who will serve for the 24-25 academic year. Amon Lopayuk of Normal will serve as president. Lopayuk grew up in Kenya before moving to Illinois with his family in 2019. He is a freshman studying music and mathematics, and he serves as the executive director of the college's activities committee. Jackson Hendricks of Normal will serve as vice president. Hendricks is a graduate of Normal West High School, where he served on the student council and the Illinois High School Student Advisory Board. He is currently a freshman studying computer science and user experience design. Hannah Houston of Danvers will serve as chief officer of communication. Houston is a freshman studying communications. The Student Government Association officers are elected by Heartland students, according to a news release. Austin Cook of Bloomington was seated as the student trustee to the Heartland Board of Trustees during its regular meeting on April 16th. He is a graduate of Central Catholic High School and a freshman, pursuing an associate's degree in arts with a focus on business. Cook is also a member of the Heartland Hawks men's soccer team. The student board member will hold privileges of membership, including the right to make and second motions and attend executive sessions, according to Heartland. In Chicago news, we have Migrant Influx Sparks Racial Tensions by Matt Brown. The closure of Wadsworth Elementary School in 2013 was a blow to residents of the majority black neighborhood. It served symbolizing a city indifferent to their interests. So when the city reopened Wadsworth last year to shelter hundreds of migrants without seeking community input, it added insult to injury. Across Chicago, black residents are frustrated that long-standing needs are not being met, while the city's newly arrived are cared for with a sense of urgency and with their tax dollars. Our voices are not valued nor heard, said Genesis Young, a lifelong Chicagoan who lives near Wadsworth. Chicago is one of several big American cities grappling with a surge of migrants. The Republican governor of Texas has been sending them by the busload to highlight his grievances with the Biden administration's immigration policy. To manage the influx, Chicago has already spent more than $300 million of city, state, and federal funds to provide housing, health care, education, and more to over 38,000 mostly South American migrants desperate for help. The speed with which these funds were marshaled has stirred widespread resentment among black Chicagoans. But community leaders are trying to ease racial tensions and channel the public's frustrations into agitating for the greater good. The outcry over migrants in Chicago and other large Democratic-led cities is having wider implications in an election year. The Biden administration is now advocating a more restrictive approach to immigration in its negotiations with Republicans in Congress. Since the Wadsworth building reopened as a shelter, Young has felt extreme anxiety because of the noise, loitering, and round-the-clock police presence that came with it. More than anything, she and other neighbors say, it is a reminder of problems that have been left unsolved for years, including high rates of crime, unemployment, and homelessness. I definitely don't want to seem insensitive to them and them wanting a better life. However, if you can all of a sudden come up with all these millions of dollars to address their housing, why didn't you address the homeless issue here? Said Charlotte Jackson, the owner of a bakery and restaurant in the South Loop neighborhood. For so long, we accepted that this is how things had to be in our communities, said Chris Jackson, who co-founded the bakery with his wife. This migrant crisis has made many people go, wait a minute, no it doesn't. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson declined to comment for this story. The city received more than $200 million from the state and federal government to help care for migrants after Johnson appealed to Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and President Joe Biden. The president will be in Chicago in August to make his reelection pitch at the 2024 Democratic National Convention. Some Black Chicagoans are protesting the placement of shelters in their neighborhoods, but others aim to turn the adversity into an opportunity. Chicago is a microcosm to the rest of the nation, said the Reverend Jeanette C. Wilson, National Executive Director of the civil rights group Push for Excellence. Black communities have faced discrimination and underinvestment for decades and are justifiably frustrated, Wilson said. The attention the migrants are receiving is deserved, she added, but it's also a chance for cities to reflect on their responsibility to all underserved communities. There is a moral imperative to take care of everybody, Wilson said. After nearly 2 years of acrimony, the city has begun to curb some accommodations for migrants, which has caused its own backlash. The city last month started evicting migrants who overstayed a 60-day limit at shelters, prompting condemnation from immigrant rights groups and from residents worried about public safety. As the potential for racial strife rises, some activists are pointing to a history as a cautionary tale. Hundreds of thousands of Black Southerners moved to Chicago in the early 20th century in search of greater freedoms and economic opportunities. White Chicagoans at the time accused them of receiving disproportionate resources from the city, and in 1919, tensions boiled over. In a surge of racist attacks in cities across the United States that came to be known as Red Summer, white residents burned large swaths of Chicago's Black neighborhoods and killed 38 Black people, including by lynching. Those white folks were like, hell no, they're coming here and they're taking our jobs, said Richard Wallace, founder of Equity and Transformation, a majority Black community group that co-hosted in a forum in March to improve dialogue between Black and Latino residents. He hears echoes of that past bigotry, intentional or not, when Black Chicagoans complain about the help being given to the migrants. And with that, we conclude the reading of part one of the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part two.